Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Built Black Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Dope Black Dads podcast. I'm Marvin Harrison, and today we are delving into a topic that's both vital and often overlooked in our community. It's mental health. We're joined by Sharon Black, a therapist with nearly two decades of experience and an accredited NHS Talking Therapies clinician. We're going to unpack the NHS Talking Therapies campaign, get real about mental health, and shed light on how we can all benefit from talking therapies. Sharon, it's great to have you here.
Thanks, Marvin. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about such an important topic.
So I am literally like a child in a shop right now with way too much money from my birthday party, and I would love to talk to you about this. Let's start at the beginning. What exactly is the NHS Talking Therapies campaign, and why is it so important for Black audiences and the community?
Okay, let me start. So the campaign's aim really is to encourage individuals from the Black community to participate in therapy. And promoting the fact that it's important to treat your mental health as good as you treat your physical health, if that makes sense. And also to break the stigma of manning up. Because, you know, within our community, we've always acted man up, you know, it's to break that stigma. It takes more strength to deal with emotional issues than it does actually to push them down and bury them. Mm. So it's about breaking that stigma.
Yeah. What are some of the other myths and barriers that you hope to break down with this campaign? Because it's not just about men as well. It's also just Blackness. It's kind of like you can't afford to need help almost. It's like you have to be strong.
It's about communicating. It's about using your voice. Mm. Because we don't talk about it within the Black community at all. Mm. Talk about mental health, really. So it's about breaking that stigma and breaking it down and just talking about it to each other. It's like with the older people, mental health, you can't go there. So there's lots of ways, which I'll talk about a bit later on, how we can manage that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's about 5 or 6 years between us. So in the generations that you were raised in, was the idea of therapy even broached? Was it even something that you would even, it's almost like a weakness, wouldn't it?
It was a weakness. That's what we were told. You know, it wasn't talked about. It wasn't talked about at all. You don't need therapy. What's therapy? Why do you need to go and talk to other people?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the stigma this campaign is trying the best to break. Mm. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a bit later on as we go down. Right. So another part, why this campaign has actually come about is that NHS England did a survey, and they found that within the Black community that there were 66% of people that have been concerned about the mental health. So like just under 2 out of 5, maybe 39% of people have experienced depression, and just over a quarter have experienced general anxiety disorder. So, you know, it is something that needs to be talked about, because if these many people are experiencing these things but not getting professional, you know, so the campaign is here to start using our voice, basically, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then there are multiple different forms, because I remember the first time I engaged with talking therapy, I met a counsellor.
Yeah.
But since then, I've dealt with different types of professionals. Can you speak to some of the different types of talking therapies that exist and how they exist with different issues?
Yeah, so there is a lot of different kinds of talking therapies. Now, I'll try my best not to go too technical, so let me know if I'm going a little bit too technical. So within the talking therapies, it comes under like a step care model. Hmm. So the first step would be you go see your GP or you self-refer over to us, and you do that online. So that would be the first step. The second step is you would talk to, like, they're called psychological wellbeing practitioners. So that's guided self-help. So they would go through some skills with you to learn and do yourself, if you know what I mean, and practice mm-hmm. with yourself. And you might have a couple of face-to-face sessions with them. And then the next is you talk to a professional like me. That's step three, like me. So, and mm-hmm. that focuses on the way people think and believe, mm-hmm. you know, what the thoughts are and the beliefs are, and it can be trauma and things like that. Then you have counselling. That's another modality where you in a confidential space, you discuss your difficulties with a trained professional. Mm. There's no judgmentalness. There's complete confidentiality, and it's a safe environment. And then you've got interpersonal psychotherapy, which is IPT. Now, this is a little bit harder to explain, but my explanation for this is it's the goal to improve your mental health symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it involves communicating within relationships, getting to know yourself. Like if you're finding it hard to maintain relationships, or you've had some sort of transition going on where you were in a relationship and they're no longer, it works on relationships more than anything else. Mm. And the other one, it's step three, is couples therapy. So it's really talking about your relationships within couples therapy. Yeah. So they're the main modalities, really.
So that's really interesting, because I think when I first went and I met a counsellor, there was a point where I realised that there was potentially a limitation in terms of the next level of work that I needed to do. At what stage would you say different things would need to be spoken to different types of people? You kind of touched on it just there.
What do you mean, Marvin? Sorry.
Well, I think if I'm speaking to a counsellor, I think I'd actually really be honest. The first time I went in is because a friend of mine had been sectioned, and I thought he was exactly the same as I was. I thought he was a brilliant, smart, not to be too narcissistic, but I thought I look at him as a brilliant, smart person who was worldly, who was, you know, high performing academically. And we were like, you know, peas in a pod in university. And then just near the end of university, he had what was called a stress induced psychosis episode. Yeah. And it started to become really harmful, and he started engaging in self-harm. I just didn't understand it. I had no idea why somebody would do that. And I started speaking to a counselor first.
Yeah.
And then after about three, four months, it felt like the conversation needed to progress into maybe different forms of work. So how do you differentiate the skills of someone that's like a counselor versus to someone who is a psychotherapist?
They're all more or less the same, really. It's just a little bit extra training in different areas. But what the difference is there is, like, psychosis and things like that is secondary care, where talking therapists is primary care. So, like, you'd have primary care is like your GP, where secondary care would be like your consultant.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So that's the difference.
Yeah. Thank you. You've been in the field for about 20 years. Which is like... You know, it's not that long. It's a couple of years. But we really appreciate all the work that you've done in this space for us to have this conversation today. But can you share an example of sort of a transformative moment or story that really sort of moves you, that shows the power of talking therapy?
All right. Don't make it easy for me, Marv. So I have got one that stands out for me, and that's really because I was really involved in this, and all my patients and all my clients are important to me, but this one stands out for me, and it was in the last 12 months as well.
Mm.
So first of all, the essential thing about therapy is the therapeutic relationship, okay? Mm. You need a really good therapeutic relationship. So I just want to say to the audience, if they ever come into therapy and they find that they're not connecting with their therapist, ask for another therapist. No therapist is going to be offended, because all of us know that the therapeutic relationship is the most important thing. That's how it works. If you don't have the trust in me, we can't make it work. Okay, so I'll talk about the client that you've just asked me about. So firstly, I worked with this client, and in order to get him to start trusting me, we first of all, we started working on his attachment issues. So his attachment, his poor attachment stemmed from parental emotional neglect, not physical, emotional neglect, really. So we started to build like a strong therapeutic relationship. We'd start talking about that. And that helped him then. He made a really good progress, to be honest. And it built his confidence. And then it built his trust in me, okay? So we moved on from that and started getting stuck into what was really happening. So his child's mother, about 15 years before he came into therapy with me, when the child was 6 months old, committed suicide. Okay? And the mother's grandparents got full custody of his child. And they wouldn't let him see his child. So this made him lose complete trust in everybody around him because he really trusts the grandparents and everything. And why is the mother committed suicide? And it really threw him, you know. But what he did is he buried it and he never talked about it. So he came into therapy with me and we started to work on the grieving process. We worked together during these sessions and he was able then to express and release his anger, his sadness, his grief, and his tears for the very first time. You know what I mean? It was really powerful, to be honest. Then he started to, after a while, he started to think, oh, I want to connect with my child. How do I do that? So he started working and not having a look at that. And by the end of that, the therapy sessions, the client was able to reconnect with his daughter, which was Grace. He did this by really, the techniques that we used were role play, communicational exercises, building his self-esteem, teaching him how to communicate, what to say to his daughter and what not to say, and healthy, you know, healthy conversations. And by the end, like I said, he started to have regular contact with his daughter. He also had the difficulty because of this mistrust in his new relationship. He found it really, really odd to focus on himself or trust his partner. So he started to focus on developing his self-esteem and his communication abilities. I hope this is making sense to you.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
And each week I would assign him a task to do with his partner, and this helped them to build a really good, positive relationship between themselves. It really empowered them both. By actively doing these little tasks each week. And the most important thing to me, I'll never forget, we had a session in his house and it was his partner worked from home. And it was the first time he'd actually done the session within his partner's office. And I can remember him looking around the room and he was just looking around the room. He was like, oh, look at all these pictures of me and my partner. And I was like, well, is that the first time you've been in the room? And he says, no, I come in here all the time. But it's actually the first time that I've noticed.
Wow.
And it was just like a light bulb moment. He says, my partner actually loves me. And he really believed it. It was the first time he'd made that connection by looking around. He'd had to go through all that process to actually realize that his partner actually loved him when he looked at his pictures. And it was really good. About 8 months after we completed therapy, he wrote me a letter, which lovely. And he said, thank you for helping him. And he said that I'd helped him to get over the past 15 years of his life. And he feels like he's living now instead of existing, which I thought was beautiful.
That's a powerful sentiment.
Yeah.
Is it safe and fair to say that this is more common with men than it is for women? And why would you, and if so, would you characterize that? What would be the reasons why that would be?
Common in what way do you mean, Marvin?
As in that type of occurrence, as in the maybe the emotional disconnect through masculinity and what society asks us to be. Does it wire us to be slightly different in regards to our emotions?
Not really. The emotions are the same within men and women. The difference is women will talk to each other about coming to therapy and doing things where men don't seem to want to talk to. But you'd be surprised. I have more men clients than I actually do women. Yeah.
Do you think that that's in the span of your 20 years, would you say that that's a shift in the last 20 years as to how many men versus women you're seeing now?
Definitely, definitely. There's definitely a shift. But the problem is, we're not getting people from the Black community. We're not getting the men.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Or many women from the Black community coming over. And
Is there something that drives that behavior beyond just the stigma of therapy? Is there other causes as to why Black men aren't showing up on your door?
I would say it's mainly the generational stigma. I mean, my mum when I was younger used to say, you know, you don't take us outside the family, you don't, don't take us outside the family, you don't need to talk to other people about what's going on. There's no other reason apart from maybe a lot of people don't understand that there is talking therapies out there and they're free. And that's what we're trying to promote, really.
The
awareness of it.
So for somebody listening, we've got them like 70% leaning in. They're listening right now and they feel like I'm hearing things that could be useful to me. Is there, you know, something that could be like, how do they get a little bit more started with it? How do they get further into the NHS Talking Therapy campaign? What's the process? Are there any costs involved? How much time does it take to be seen or be referred?
Right. So the way you access the talking therapy is two ways, really. You can either go and see your GP and get self-referred over by your GP, or you can self-refer online through nhs.uk/talk. And that will find your local service. The treatments are complete is either on the phone, online, or in person. And it's entirely free. And I have to say that it's entirely free. I have a lot of people who do it online or on the phone. If they've told their work, if they're working and they've told the bosses, they'll find a room and they'll go and do it. If they haven't, they'll go and sit in the car and spend an hour with me and talk, you know. That's the way you would actually get into talking therapies. Is that the question you asked me?
How do they process? And I think you showed the website is a great way, and it's absolutely free, which is absolutely amazing. It's really interesting because I think I did a men's circle I hold often. And when I was talking to them about therapy, someone made a joke, which I always think is a foundation of how someone truly feels, about, nah, man, if I go there and tell them how I feel, they'll probably section me.
That's one of the big stigmas.
Is that true? Is that possible? Does that happen?
In the talking therapies, no, because we're primary care. And like I said before, there's primary care. To get sectioned, you'd have to go over to secondary care. Don't get me wrong, if I thought you were going to hurt yourself or hurt somebody else, I would have to report that, but that's safeguarding.
Mm.
If you were in the states of psychosis or something like that, you would be in secondary care in the first place, and they're the ones who section you, not us in primary care.
Yeah.
So the safety of being sectioned isn't really... And we hear so many things over the past 20 years I've heard. I don't really think there's much that could shock me, and I can help you with these things.
Yeah.
You just need to open up. You might be overthinking and thinking, oh, God, if I say that, they're going to think I'm crazy. Do you know what I mean? They're going really, but no.
Yeah. And at what point does it become something that you need to escalate? What's an example of if it becomes more, if you are talking about, if it's reoccurring over a certain period of time, is it if I have detailed plots of waiting outside of his house? When does it become like, actually, I'm worried about you now. This is bigger than me.
It becomes worrying when it becomes risky. If I think you're going to commit suicide or hurt yourself or hurt somebody else, that's when I have to refer you to talk about, you know, over to secondary care. I'd go through safeguarding first. It would have to be something like, let me think of an example. Just give me five more. an example could be like, if you were saying, I'm having hallucinations and they're talking to me and they're telling me that I need to kill myself. Then I would try and step you up to secondary care because they're the ones who deal with things like that, because, you know, like hallucinations and voices and, you know, I'm standing on the train track and I feel like pushing the person off, that sort of thing. But it should have to be, after we talked about it and I realise that you really mean this and it's not just part of your emotional trauma or...
Yeah.
Something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Yeah. I think that's a really important distinguishing element, because I think often when I do speak to men, there is a genuine fear that they will be escalated and it will be taken out of their own control. And while they're trying to manage themselves, they feel they have a form of control in their processes, even if they're not the best processes.
Yeah.
So that's a really good thing to know.
Yeah.
Can we talk about like success rates? So is... You know, how long does this work normally go on for with a particular patient? You know, what does success even look like? Yeah, what would you call a successful process?
So the statistical recovery rate is 50%, which is deemed as good, which it is good.
Mm.
That's the actual recovery. People getting over the depression or their anxiety or whatever, and they've recovered. For me, though, it's about progress.
Mm.
That the client makes from the time they walk into my office until the last session, okay?
Mm.
So I'm going to use a metaphor here, Pandora's box. So how I see it is everybody has this box and it starts to overflow with all the problems, stress, traumas, everything that you're going through, and it overflows, and I see that as depression, okay?
Mm.
All the emotional burdens and everything that's going on. So what I do with my clients is I try and empty that box. So the things you need to keep, I'll fold them up. We'll fold them up nice and neatly, put them back in the box and keep them safe. The things that we don't need to keep, we process them and we throw them away.
Mm.
That allows us then to close our box and it alleviates the depression. But at the same time, if the depression returns, we've got the skills to deal with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really, really powerful.
Yeah. So you have the coping skills.
Yeah. And obviously we're a parenting podcast. Now, I will say frontline parenting is incredibly difficult. It will test and expand every part of your...
you're
knowing, you're being, there is no way you're going to navigate parenting to adulthood and not have a moment of reflection. So, is there a message to parents in terms of dealing with their children?
Definitely.
What are the signs that maybe you need to intervene, escalate? What should they be looking for in terms of behavior? Because there's a natural order of evolution of our children that just happens. There's hormones and puberty when that kicks in. And then when does it go from that into actually I need to be worried?
Okay. So during my 20 years, I've worked with children for a long time from the age of 7 years up. Okay. So kids from 7 years and older. Okay. So I think it's crucial to look out for the behavior and the emotional changes that you can see. Teenagers find it easier to hide, but there's some things that they can't hide. It's important never to assume that what's going on with your teenager is because they are a teenager. And that's really difficult because they go through mood swings and they're this, that, and the other when they're the teenagers, which can mimic depression, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So as a parent, you trust your instincts. If you think something's going on, trust that instinct, because as a parent, you know your children. You know your children better than anybody else. Like your children know you better than anybody else, you know? Mm. So if you feel something's not quite right here, trust that. Mm. I'm not saying jump on your child and start asking them loads of questions. Mm. Just stand back and observe. And, you know, what's going on here? And if you've got a close relationship with them, ask the odd little questions. Mm. So the symptoms, there's lots of symptoms to look out for, but the main symptoms would be a sudden change in behaviour, okay? Mm. Self-harming. Okay, if you start seeing cuts on them or burns on them, and they normally hide them, they're very good at hiding them. So when I say stand back and observe, observe, have a look.
Mm.
You know, look at their arms when they're taking the shirt off. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And have a look. Don't just jump on them and ask them because they'll deny it completely, but just observe it. Another one is unexplained physical changes like losing weight or gaining weight.
Mm.
Okay. Another one is sadness that lasts more than 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Mm. If they're sad and they've been sad for a couple of weeks, that's a real big sign of there's something going on. Changes in the way they socialise. So if they normally go out and they're out and about with their friends, or they communicate by PlayStation with the mates or whatever, and all of a sudden they start pulling away.
Mm.
Something's happening. Something's going on with them. Mm. Another one is extreme anger, aggression, and defensiveness, which could say that's a lot of teenagers. But like I say, you can't say that it's because they're a teenager. You have to look out for these things. And the other one, the last one, would be unusual thoughts and experiences. So if they start saying to you, "Oh, I was sitting around the back garden the other day and I saw this person come in," and they start either hallucinations or they start experiencing things in the wrong way. Like I say, you're the parent, you know your child. If they start having experiences that aren't the norm, that would be something to look out for definitely. Yeah.
So Sharon, as a black person yourself, is there a particular skill set that your experience enables you to have, or a particular way of processing your teachings to other black people? So would you advocate that black people should go get a black therapist?
No, this is one of the things I really want to voice in this. And there's a lot. Yes, the answer to your question is yes, I do have values and skills, and I've been through it, so I can identify better with another black person. I know what it's like to be told, no, you don't need to take it outside the family and all the rest of it. But the problem that we have, so if you came into therapy and you said, I need to see a black therapist, there isn't enough black therapists out there. Mm. Don't get me wrong, all therapies are culturally sensitive.
Mm.
But if you wanted to actually talk to a black therapist, we couldn't guarantee that.
Yeah.
So I would say to anybody out there who wants a career in therapy, which is an absolute brilliant, self-satisfying job, okay? Mm. Or people who are already trained, please go out and train, or please apply for the jobs that are there, so that we have more black therapists, so that we can say to people, yeah, you know. And that's the biggest shame for me, that there isn't enough black therapists out there.
Yeah. So just to wrap up, if you were standing on a stage in front of all black men and all black people, what would be your key message on this topic B that just lands and gets everybody to sign up straight away?
I'd say start using your voices, okay? Start using your voices. Start speaking about mental health. Make it a normal thing to do. For me, there's like for black, say black men and black women, but black men, my nephews and my son, they talk to them. They go to their barbers, you know what I mean? Mm. And they listen to what the barbers have got to say. So having community champions would be a really good thing. So the barbers have got leaflets and that, and they can talk. Because you've got to remember, the person sitting in your chair might not have been out the house for three months.
Yeah.
They might have their haircut and never come out of the house again for another 3 months. So just say, oh, I haven't seen you for 3 months. Oh, mm. We've all been talking about mental health lately. Just start the conversation rolling. So what I would say to people out there is really speak up. Talk about mental health with your peers. Make it normal. Practice self-care. You know, reach out and get professional support. And just remember that it's okay not to be okay. Do you know what I mean? Just remember, it's okay not to be okay, and reach out and get that support because it's there for you.
Amazing. Sharon, thank you so much. Your insights have been absolutely invaluable. To you listening at home, please remember it's okay to not be okay, and reaching out for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. Explore the NHS Talking Therapy service for support. That's all for today. Stay informed, stay connected, and let's keep breaking the silence around mental health.
Anyone struggling with feelings of depression or anxiety, such as excessive worry, panic attacks, social anxiety, post-traumatic stress, or obsessions and compulsions, should reach out to NHS Talking Therapies on nhs.uk/talk.
Dope Black Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.